Today on Rockin' the Suburbs.
Sad news from the world of music, and usually we start these tribute episodes out very somberly. Sad news from the world of music today. We note the passing of Mojo Nixon at age 66. But you know what? Mojo wasn't that kind of guy. So we want to be, you know, it really be a little more exuberant, I think, in our tribute here to Mojo Nixon, right?
If it wasn't early. If it wasn't early in the day on a Sunday, we'd all be drinking whiskey in tribute to Mojo.
You mean you're not?
It's a little early.
Oh.
No. Okay. Craig may have something in the coffee cup. Yeah,
just, I don't know. Just coffee here.
Yeah, just coffee. All right. This is Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Linehan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And with us, we have special guest Craig Rosen. Hey, Craig.
Howdy.
Howdy. All right. So we're going to talk about Mojo Nixon. He just passed. I think it was a surprise to people. It was a sudden episode, right? I think a cardiac arrest, something on an outlaw country cruise, which Patrick and I talked about a while back with Bill Davis from Dash Rip Rock. He was part of that bill as well, mm-hmm. and he talked how much fun those outlaw country cruises are. So, but the family of Mojo, in their statement, you know, basically was like, hey, he went out doing what he loved to do, which was like, you know, entertaining the peoples, right? So I'll just say real quickly, I remember Mojo Nixon's music mainly from, from when I was in college and got the album Bodacious, which had Elvis's Everywhere on it and many other really fun songs. And it corresponded right with the time, interestingly, in my music exploration where I was really getting into Elvis. So anyway, like, because it was that time of my life where I was like really trying to go back and explore, you know, early rock and roll and that kind of stuff. So I really appreciated that kind of roots rock at that time and that feeling of, you know, that sort of joyful music that he did. And then, and of course, you can't deny the humor. Of course, that was the hook.
Shopping carts, and they think they're talking to Allah, they're talking to themselves, man, no, they're talking to Elvis, Elvis, Elvis. You know what's going on, that Bermuda Triangle, down the Bermuda Triangle.
Elvis needs boats, Elvis needs boats, Elvis, 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 Elvis needs boats.
Ah, the sailing Elvis, Captain Elvis, Commodore Elvis it is. Yeah, man, you know, people from outer space, outer space, they come up to me, they don't look like Dr. Spock, they don't look like Klingons, all that Star Trek job, they look like Elvis,
Elvis,
everybody in outer space looks like Elvis, because Elvis is a perfect being, we're all moving in perfect peace and harmony towards Elvisness, soon all will become Elvis, everything, everywhere will be Elvis, why do you think they call it evolution anyway, it's really Elvis-lution, Elvis.
Then I got the next album was Root Hog or Die, I think, which of course had the song Debbie Gibson is Pregnant with My Two-Headed Love Child, right? Was that one? Yes. And then I believe the next album after that was a Mojo. By the way, those first two were Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper. And then the next one, I think, was just Mojo Nixon. It was called Otis. I'm doing this all by memory. I'm not looking up anything here. I think it was called Otis. And that one had the song Don Henley Must Die. So yes. There you go. So all of them had like a hook to bring you into the album, but they were all like, I felt like really well, you know, conceived and executed albums. You know, he would, as goofy as it might be, I do think he put, you know, real thought and effort into his work. And like I said, wanted to sort of, I think, pay tribute to this, you know, kind of American roots music that he loved. And maybe, I guess, you know, kind of bring more people into it. Although, honestly, probably the humor just reflected his personality. So anyway, that's my Mojo Nixon story. After that, I think I kind of fell out. Oh, I did see him perform live once. I forgot about that. When I was living in Louisville, I saw him perform live once, and that was really, really fun. We'll get to Craig in a moment here because he's the real expert. But Patrick, what about you? What's your music relationship with Mojo Nixon?
Yeah, I go early with Mojo. I can still remember the day that I was sitting in my friend Steve Healy's apartment at the University of Virginia, and it was 1985 or 86, I'm not sure which, but the first album was all that was out, and we went to Plan 9 Records and we purchased it because a couple of weeks after this, we had tickets to see the Pogues at the old 930 Club in D.C., and Mojo Nixon and Skid Roper were the opening act.
Oh, nice.
So we thought, wow, well, we better listen to this record. And I just remember laughing and loving it so much. I can still see the both of us sitting there, like, cracking up, passing the album back and forth, and just, you know, thinking, this is the coolest thing I've ever heard. Like, so funny and so smart. The Mushroom Maniac song where he's crawling around at 4 a.m. digging in cow pies for mushrooms.
Like, right.
We thought this was the best.
All right, bring it down, fellas. This is the Bots Wannabe. There I was, kind of walking across this big cow field. Actually, I wasn't walking, I was crawling. It was about 4:30 a.m. I was down on all fours, kind of sniffing for my psychedelic delight inside of a big, steaming, stinking hunk of cow turdola. Yeah. So I was down there. Yeah. I was down there and I was kind of sniffing around and the moon was full and I was shaking and baking and quaking, and all of a sudden the king of the cows, the big man, I'm talking about the big cow himself, the master of disaster, the king of the universe, the leader of the unfree cow world, come up to me and he said, hey Mojo, what you doing walking around there on all fours sniffing cow till 4:30 a.m, boo? I said, well, Mr. King of the cows, I got a problem. I started to shake. I started to sweat. I started to kind of gyrate. I felt the rock sensation sweeping the nation coming up through my feet. I said, Mr. King of the Cows. King of the Cows. I'm a mushroom. Maniac. I'm a mushroom. Maniac. I'm a maniac. I'm a maniac.
And then we saw them open up for the Pogues, and it was fantastic. I mean, Skid had his, like, a pole with all these percussion instruments and a little bass thing on it, and it was just so cool that the two of them went up there and played, and it seemed like such a perfect, fit for the Pogues being so weird. Yes. And here's this other weird act, and it was just so great. That remains the only time I ever saw him. And then I always, you know, loved the fact that I could comfort myself by knowing that Mojo was out there somewhere doing his thing, you know, like he's rocking it for a lot of people. And the only other record I got by him was, I saw one day that he worked with, he had a band called the Toad Lickers.
Yeah.
And Lickers was spelled like the liquor, not like licking a toad. And they got together with Jello Biafra from the Dead Kennedys, and they did an album with one of the greatest titles in the history of music, in my opinion, Prairie Home Invasion. So I had to get that record. That title was just That's too great. Yeah. And it's a funny album. It's got a political edge with, you know, Jello and all that, but yeah. It's really good. Takes some traditional melodies and kind of turns them into different things. So it's really a cool album. And everything I ever came across with Mojo, I just loved the way he did it. And that's what I was trying to think of really quick. There's a song to the melody of Nebraska by Bruce Springsteen, but they turned it into Hamlet Chicken Plant Disaster. So they would do a lot of stuff like that. I loved that Mojo was out there, and every time I thought about him, brought a smile to my face. You know, but I can't say it was a lot, but whenever I did.
Yeah, I think he did stay very active with radio later on, and he had a show on Sirius XM on the Outlaw Country station that was really fun if anybody got a chance to listen to that. But, you know, of course, I think he's going to go down in history as a novelty act, but I think the songs really were mostly like really witty and smart, you know. It wasn't it's hard to explain, you know. It was goofy, but it felt like, you know, it's the kind of humor I like, which is like smart stupid,
you know. And I'll tell you really quick, I was playing a couple of songs in tribute to Mojo on my radio show on Suburbs Radio, and Scott Parks was listening. He had never heard Mojo before. He texted me and said, "I've never heard Mojo Nixon except for that one song about Elvis." And I played Jesus at McDonald's, and I played something else. And he was like, "This is fantastic. Yeah. I'm going out and get, you know how Parks is. I'm going out to get every record." I just love that, because that's the kind of feeling Mojo gives you when you listen to it.
Yeah, you sort of fall in love with music again. It's like all the stuff you take for granted, he puts it right in your face and says, you're going to love this, you know? So anyway.
I dare you not to like
that's
it.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, so here we go. We have Craig Rosen here. Craig Rosen, of course, music journalist, and he messages me, you know, after the news of Mojo Nixon's death, and he says, "I wrote the liner notes for a Mojo Nixon box set," and I was like, "What?" So there's probably there it is. He's holding it up. It's like a brick of a box set. There, it's a amazing CD box set.
Yeah, it's all the. Yeah, it does look like a brick.
So
actually,
you know, we have our Mojo Nixon expert here, and Craig, do you want to talk about you sort of like personally, you know, how you got into Mojo Nixon? Then we can talk a little bit more about this.
Yeah, I would love to share that story, and of course, all roads lead to REM.
This is true.
Weird story, but. You guys were recently doing the pilgrimage theme with people calling in and sharing their stories, their rock and roll pilgrimages. I didn't go to a place, but I went to see REM as much as I could in the earlier days, because I had a hunch they were going to get big and, you know, someday they would be playing arenas and it wouldn't be as much fun or whatever. Right. So I would go to San Diego usually and Santa Barbara to see them. And I think this was probably like the third time that I went up to San Diego on the second leg of the Reckoning tour. It was September 84. And my cousin went to San Diego State, and his childhood friend, Dan Perloff, also was his fraternity brother there and at San Diego State. And Dan was very into music, and he sort of helped bring the Beat Farmers to Rhino. So we met Dan and my cousin at, it was the Fox Theater to see REM. And then after, somehow, Peter Buck always wanted to like check out bands or whatever. So afterwards, there was like a caravan from the show. I mean, I just bought tickets. I don't think I was in college then. I don't think I had connections or anything. So my friend and I, we went to the show, but after the REM show, which of course was great, we went to a place called Bodie's, a famous club in San Diego, where the Beat Farmers were playing, but Mojo and Skid were opening up. And this was, before the first album came out, and we were just blown away. I mean, the thing, Mojo's records, those early records are great, but the thing is, as a live performer, he was amazing. I mean, he's really kind of like a performance artist. I mean, Patrick mentioned the song Mushroom Maniac.
Yeah.
And that song, when he played that song live, he pulled out an empty sparkling bottle and he banged it on the ground as percussion, and he's running around like a maniac, banging the sparkling bottle on the ground. And when he did Stuffin' Martha's Muffin, he had like a old TV frame that he put on his head and wore like had some sort of like, those old baseball helmets with the straps inside. Somehow he configured it so he would wear this TV screen or TV frame on his head while he performed stuff in Martha's Muffin. So, I mean, he was completely out there and like energy off the charts. So entertaining. There's no way you couldn't pay attention to the guy. I mean, just amazing. And weird side note, must have been like that Mojo energy. At one point, I didn't know him or anything, but I was standing around, we were talking, I think Dan was talking to Peter Buck, and I don't know if he said something or whatever, I annoyed Peter. So Peter picked up a beer bottle that was pretty much empty, but he poured it on Dan's head and a few drips came on to Dan's head. And then after the gig, we're following them because we're going to sleep over at their place. And I got stuck at a light. Dan pulls into a Jack in a Box the wrong way through the drive-in and then pulls out. He gets pulled over.
Oh, no.
And we kind of pull over and like we're watching from a distance and he gets arrested.
Oh, no.
And this is before like cell phones. I mean, just weird Mojo energy this whole night. I'll wrap it up. We'll get back to Mojo. But I blame this on the weird Mojo energy. He gets arrested. We don't know where they are. We don't have a cell phone. We have no way to get in touch with them. So we decide to drive back home to, to L.A., back to the Valley. And I'm driving my old my first car was a Karmann Ghia. And it was a weird that I bought with my bar mitzvah money. And it's like not a standard Karmann Ghia. It's got like tricked out a little bit. It's got these flared wheel wells and bigger tires than the usual Karmann Ghia. And we're driving somewhere, on the 5 or 405 or whatever near Camp Pendleton. It's dark. Get a flat tire.
Oh, no.
In the middle of the night. It's probably like 2 a.m. at this point. And of course, genius, the genius that I am, the Karmann Ghia has got a spare in the trunk in the front, but it's the standard tire.
Oh, no.
So you couldn't really put it on because, the car would be all lopsided. And, eventually I think like a Marine or someone picked me up from Camp Pendleton and took me to a gas station. It was morning by then. I didn't have a credit card by then. I was 21 year old. I had to call my father, get his credit card number to get a new tire. And, eventually we made it home. But I blame it all on Mojo. Curse you.
Wow.
That's a great story.
So that was the first time I saw Mojo Nixon. Needless to say, it was memorable.
Just one thing I want to go back to real quickly, that you mentioned Bodie's.
Yes.
That was in San Diego.
Yes, that was where I think the beet farmers played there all the time.
Okay, got
and
it.
The beet farmers in Mojo, they were really tight. They were like sort of brother and sister bands. I don't know who's the sister, who's the brother, but and he, even Mojo, I guess when he got to San Diego, he met Country Dick, and they were in a band, the Snuggle Bunnies, which was a pre-Beat Farmers band.
Yeah.
And Mojo, when I interviewed him for the liner notes, he said that, Country Dick adopted me as their pet. I was kind of like their adult
nephew. That's great. Well, I just bring it up because there's a song on Bodacious called Positively Bodie's Parking Lot. It's actually quite a nice little sweet song, actually. It's really well written.
Good memory, and that's definitely a reference to Bodie's. You know, that was like the big San Diego hangout.
Okay, so how did the liner notes gig come about? Should we fast forward to that?
Yeah, that came through Dan, and who was working for Manifesto.
Okay.
That Mojo somehow, Dan was telling me, Mojo somehow secured the rights to all of his early records, to his entire catalog. So they put this box set out, which is, I think it's like, all his albums, under the Mojo Nixon name. It doesn't have I was checking it while Patrick was talking. It doesn't have the Jello Biafra collaboration, but it's all the records that attributed to Mojo Nixon or credited to Mojo Nixon. It's got the Mojo and Skid records too.
Okay.
So I did a long phone interview with him, and, I was laughing most of the time because he's just so funny. I mean, the guy is just so quick-witted and, had such a great sense of humor and such a great vibe. He was just incredible.
And what did you learn about him? Some key points there that you learned from that time?
The thing I didn't really know about his early punk band. He had this band, I think it was pre San Diego, called Zebra 123. And, his goal, it was in Denver. And he said that, he was going to take roots music and infuse it with the energy and excitement of punk rock. And then, Mojo being Mojo, he says it was like Jerry Lee Lewis on more speed, not just speed, but more speed. And he said a lot of things sounded like The Clash, but it was even faster and stupider. And that's, he relished in the stupid. I mean, you mentioned Debbie Gibson is pregnant with my two-headed love child. And I mean, I listened to that this morning, and, who could put together the line other than Mojo Nixon, the line that it's a Bigfoot baby all covered with fur now. I mean, that's like one of the greatest lines in the history of rock and roll. It's just like, he had certain things that he would come up with, and he'd sort of like keep coming back to them. And, Elvis is everywhere, Jesus at McDonald's at midnight.
Sorry, I have to interrupt here real quickly because I totally forgot about this until you mentioned the whole Jerry Lee Lewis thing, that Mojo Nixon was in the movie Great Balls of Fire. Do you guys remember that? He played.
Yeah, I know that.
He played James Van Eaton. Who was that?
Huh.
He was the drummer, and he just died, which is really weird. After Mojo. Days after Mojo died, he died.
There you go. Jimmy Van Eaton, early rock and roll drummer who played at Sun Records, dies at 86. And that was posted like 18 hours ago.
Just like two days
ago.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, just like days after Mojo.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Another,
it's the Mojo factor, man.
That's right.
Yeah.
That is the weirdest thing ever.
Yeah.
But I guess he was in a few other films. I mean, the guy was a star. He just like dripped charisma, and he was funnier than hell. I mean, he just could, he could talk. I mean, well, that's probably how he became a radio personality.
Right.
He could just riff and ad lib and, is amazing.
He's sort of perfect for the radio because not only that, his personality and his humor and all of that stuff, but he seemed to be the kind of guy who had a lot of knowledge about, you know, like I said, like early American music, right?
Yeah, he was definitely into it. And, you know, it's funny you mentioned Bruce came up in Nebraska when Patrick mentioned that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he said that. I guess he did a Springsteen cover on called The Big Payback. Big
Payback, yep. First album.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a B-side.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, really, he said, I was thinking that Bruce would notice or something, but Bruce didn't notice anything. Or Mojo.
I bought a scooter and I rented a shack out in the sun by the railroad tracks. I got a job and it's breaking my back. Wake it, wake it up and bought a big payback. Yeah. All right. I keep working and I'm working out. I keep a slipping and I'm jumping. I don't know. Throw me a wrench and says, go, 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 go. All day long, he does a did a whack, whack while I'm working, working, working for a payback. Well, there's a wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. God damn, look out, say, long dead and treated down the track. Got your neck in and lose your hammer. And you're big and I'm a wiggy, wiggy, wiggy for a payback. All right. Yeah, I'm a wiggy.
Now, I did read in one of his obituaries or tribute pieces that Don Henley did once come to one of Mojo's concerts and got up and sang the song
that Don Henley should die. That is incredible.
Yes,
I mean, he would pick out these targets. I mean, I don't think David Geffen was a fan, but Don Henley, despite what everybody thinks, had a sense of humor.
Amazing.
I know.
Amazing. Exactly. I read that. And Mojo had big respect for him after that. Just like, this guy's all right.
This is the sound of my brain. Then I said, this is the sound of my brain on Don Henley. Then I said, 1, 2, 3, 4.
It's very funny, actually, when I was writing this stuff and I was looking for video of that and I couldn't find it anywhere. And then the other day, actually, the writer Annie Zielinski was posted about it. And I remembered I thought there was a photo of it, but there wasn't. There was something, I think, in one of the Austin Weeklies, and there was an illustration. They didn't need to, there's no photographic evidence, but they had to get like the court
depict what
happened there. So if you search that, you know, you can find that clip online, and there's no photo, but an illustration of Mojo and Don Henley. And with the Bring Me the Head of David Geffen, you know, he would do publicity stunts and everything. I think he told me, it's probably in here somewhere. I think they like rented a tank or a flatbed truck or something. And they drove on Sunset in front of Geffen Records.
Wow.
It's like a publicity stunt.
That's so funny.
That's beautiful.
Oh, what he said. Geffen Records, it was one of the big labels that were afraid to bring up new artists. It was always easier to take some name artist and hire a bunch of producers, songwriters, and singers. And that's when they make their shittiest records. So he was kind of like referring to Aerosmith, I think, you know.
Yeah.
Mojo was definitely anti-corporate rock.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I did see him perform on the Arsenio Hall show. He played Elvis's Everywhere, and they handed out these. I still have it. I posted a photo of this.
Craig's walking.
He's
coming back.
Out these masks, these Elvis masks for the crowd to wear while he performed. So you can see that on YouTube, and you know when they pan the crowd, everyone's wearing their Elvis masks.
That's amazing.
He's just—I'm sure that was probably Mojo's idea. You know, I mean, he was just a character. I mean, there aren't enough of them these days in rock and roll. You know, we have to embrace them while they're here and celebrate them and remember them. You know, just an amazing talent and very funny guy. I mean, the thing that I put at the end of the liner notes and the obit, I borrowed heavily from my liner notes for that. But I think I asked him how he wanted to be remembered when I was writing the liner notes. And he said, Mojo Nixon wanted to be Richard Pryor. He's like Richard Pryor's stupid cousin if he was white and played in a rockabilly band.
Well, there you go.
I'd say things that simultaneously shocked people and spoke the truth. And then he said, I don't have much talent, but what I do have is an enormous amount of enthusiasm. As Mr. Rotten used to call it, an unlimited supply. And that's Mojo.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, we forgot to mention, perfect. Craig, that you wrote the Mojo Nixon obit for Variety.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So people can look for that online. All right, well, rest in power, Mojo Nixon. If there was ever somebody
in power.
Who should rest in power.
Yes, definitely. He is the one.
Mojo Nixon.
And it was a very Mojo Nixon way to go, you know.
Perfect.
I think.
Yeah.
Didn't he, you know, because he was, you know, the ship was in whereabouts unknown, and that's where Mojo.
The ship wasn't in the Bermuda Triangle, was it?
We don't know.
Yeah.
He slipped into another plane at that point.
That's right. All right. Well, thank you very much, Craig. Thanks for hanging out with us here.
Thank you, guys. It's always a pleasure.
And as we always like to say, you know, the artist may pass, but the music lives on. So go and check out that box set.
Amen.
Go buy the box set and get Craig some more money. Do that. The way Mojo would have wanted. All right. It's Rockin' the Suburbs. I'm Jim Lenihan.
And I'm Patrick Foster.
And
I'm Craig Rosen. Paying tribute to Mojo.
Thanks, Craig, and we'll talk to everyone else later.
The Syndicate of Soul is playing at the Free Frank Frenzy. Me and Mitchell drinking ourselves in the gin oblivion. That. Man, I know just where we're at. Positively, Bodie's parking lot. I'm going back there.
queen of the ladies' room. Got herself a new bridegroom. She's buying a rubber there in the bathroom with a thousand tiny pleasure spice. His butt is puking in the sink for the third time that night. Go for killing bullet head, taking pictures with the infrared in his paw. Fertility for this parking lot.
I blame this on the Weird Mojo energy.